The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Washington Post and the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the Triangle Radio Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. They are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And today, our journey on Armchair Traveler begins with a couple of stops that fall under the generic theme of rebuilding and repurposing. Now, you really don't have to travel far these days before you encounter communities where projects are underway to restore life to areas that have lost the luster and vitality they once had years ago. Now, the transformation underway in downtown Raleigh is just one example. Another city experiencing a similar upgrade is Springfield, Massachusetts, once home to some of the earliest colonists to come to the United States. Drawing from the city's proud past, can casino spur revival is the headline for Associated Press writer Philip Marcello's article in the August 19, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. Standing on Springfield's Main Street, the nearly $1 billion resort casino meant to spark a downtown renaissance doesn't immediately scream Las Vegas glitz. There's no neon-lit billboard, no soaring tower of glass and steel. Instead, two modest signs bearing the MGM initials are set against a backdrop of low-slung brick and stone facades meant to blend with, not dominate, the historic landscape of this storied but struggling New England city. "That's the thing we're most proud of," said company president Bill Hornbuckle before casino officials gave the Associated Press an inside look at the property last week as it nears completion. "We didn't just put a big ugly box in the middle of downtown," he said. Roughly 3 years after breaking ground, MGM Springfield opens August 24th as Massachusetts' first resort casino. The state's currently home to a more modest slots parlor south of Boston. The MGM project is the latest test case for whether casinos can spur revival in America's forgotten corners. It also renews debate about whether the Northeast is already oversaturated with gambling options. Spanning three city blocks, the 14-acre gambling, hotel, and entertainment complex is the centerpiece of a recent wave of new investment for Springfield, which is about 90 miles west of Boston and has among the state's highest poverty and unemployment rates. A new museum dedicated to hometown hero Theodore Dr. Seuss Geisel opened last summer. Commuter rail service launched this summer in a restored Union Station, and a Chinese manufacturer is churning out subway cars from a new factory. "We've become something much more than we were," says Kevin Kennedy, the city's chief development officer. "The casino has been a catalyst for many of those things," he said. But it's an open question whether the casino can meet its lofty financial promises, including hundreds of millions in tax revenue to the state, say some industry watchers. Overall gambling revenues could come in 10 to 12% lower than the roughly $500 million annually the company projected 4 years ago, based on how regional casinos are currently performing, says Paul DeBoe, a political science professor at LaSalle College in Newton, Massachusetts. A cautionary tale is upstate New York, where some casinos that recently opened with similar promises of economic revival have underperformed. At least two are already seeking a state bailout. There is no question that the glamour of casino gaming is waning as it becomes a common commodity, says Clyde Burrow, a political science professor at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley, who has long studied the Northeast casino landscape. "The challenges of keeping patrons coming will only magnify when new entrants join the fray," adds Richard McGowan, a business professor at Boston College. Wynn Resorts is set to open a flashy $2 billion facility in the Boston area next year, and the Native American tribes that own Fox Woods and Mohegan Sun are jointly proposing a third Connecticut casino just across the state line from MGM Springfield. MGM officials didn't immediately respond, but Hornbuckle, the company president, said in an earlier interview the Springfield casino reflects new taste. "The gambling floor has more of the table games like blackjack and roulette favored by younger patrons and less slot machines than originally planned. The casino also doubles down on non-gambling entertainment, bringing a movie theater and bowling alley to a downtown lacking those amenities. Promises of major musical acts for the nearby arena, Stevie Wonder is among the early acts, and seasonal events for its outdoor plaza like farmers markets and ice skating. In MGM Springfield's unusual design, which incorporates old downtown buildings and facades, is meant to set it apart and encourage downtown exploration. A castle-like armory building has been reborn as a centerpiece for the casino's outdoor plaza, while a historic brick church is uprooted and moved a few hundred yards to serve as another plaza anchor and retail space. Vintage artifacts and curiosities throughout the casino interior evoke Springfield's industrial and literary roots. Hotel rooms are adorned with quotations from Emily Dickinson, the Victorian-era poet who lived nearby, and references to the dictionary by Merriam-Webster, which is still headquartered in the city. The casino sports bar draws from Springfield's basketball cred. The sport was invented there, and it's home to the Basketball Hall of Fame, while a museum exhibit highlights the city's contributions to turn of the century innovations like the stock ticker and phonograph. The product speaks for itself, Hornbuckle says. It's engaging, it respects history. People are very prideful in Springfield, and I think that will come through. So, quite an interesting start there for the folks at Springfield, Massachusetts. Well, from Springfield, Massachusetts, Washington-based travel writer Angela Halp is going to take us to Southwest Virginia. Now, her article, In Virginia, It's a Salvaged Dog's Life at a Roanoke Guesthouse Renovated by the DIY Network Team, is found in the July 27, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. For years, fans of Salvage Dogs, a home improvement program on the DIY Network, Do-It-Yourself Network, have visited the show's warehouse in Roanoke to poke around among items rescued and ready for a new life. Now, those fans have a place to stay. The duo behind the hit show have turned a stately 107-year-old stone home just steps from the warehouse into a vacation rental and salvage show house. Its interior is a cornucopia of saved and reincarnated materials. Discarded doors serve as elegant bed frames, kitchen windows to become bathroom mirrors. It's an upcycler's dream, an inspiring display of what's possible when you reuse and repurpose. The rental, called the Stone House, is the latest project from longtime Roanoke residents Mike Whiteside, 62, a former Navy parachute rigger and professional yacht captain, and Robert Culp, 54, a builder and former Navy officer. The two started salvaging together in 1999 and opened shop as Black Dog Salvage later that year. After outgrowing their original site, they moved to a 44,000-square-foot warehouse, now their primary location, in 2003. There, visitors can browse individual parts, such as doors and tiles, as well as the furniture that Whiteside and Culp churn out in their on-site workshops. A second warehouse, about a mile away, opened to the public a year ago to showcase inventory that's just been received. Both locations have become bucket list destinations for fans of Salvage Dogs, which premiered in 2012. The team estimates they receive 150,000 visitors a year from around the United States and as far as South Africa and New Zealand. It's a destination attraction, and it's really made an impact on Roanoke as a region and around the state, said Catherine Fox, Vice President of Public Affairs and Destination Development at Visit Virginia's Blue Ridge, a tourism bureau. What we hear more times than not is that people are rerouting their trips to make a special stop at Black Dog Salvage, and on a typical day, when you go and look at the license plates in the parking lot, you'll see a wide variety of folks from all over the country. The dogs aren't the only home improvement or design personalities who have branched into hoteling. Chip and Joanna Gaines of Fixer Upper fame have opened vacation rentals in Texas, including Magnolia House, where each room is designed in the couple's style. And designer Annie Selk has 33 Main, an upscale Massachusetts inn that's a showroom for her textile business. Bjorn Hansen, a professor at New York University's Tisch Center for Hospitality, Tourism, and Sports Management, sees this as part of a trend toward individualization in the lodging industry. Until about a decade ago, if you stayed in a hotel in Florida or Maine or Texas or Washington State, the room would be the same, he said, and that's actually a negative now to a majority of travelers. People are looking for something that's more of a local experience, more genuine, more respectful to the environment or local population. The Black Dog team jokes about their lodging venture is a B&B that's missing the second B, but they're open to offering beers or bagels in lieu of breakfast. Most guests will come for one-of-a-kind treasures that Whiteside and Culp salvage during the 4 months a year they spend on the road. We're not salvage prudes, Culp said. We'll go just about anywhere, including churches, sawmills, schools, mansions, airport hangars, and boats. The duo used materials they already had in their workshops to renovate the 2,400-square-foot three-bedroom property, which is rented on a whole-house basis and accommodates up to six people. The result is a guest room for people who think like we do, Culp said during a recent tour of the house, which opened this month. It's a fusion of historical architecture and modern convenience and style. We respect old things, but we don't mind mixing the new, and that's exactly what we've done here. Beyond its allure to salvage aficionados, the property offers a convenient base for exploring Roanoke, a railroad town nestled in Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains. It's adjacent to the Roanoke Valley Greenway, a 30-mile biking and walking trail, and a few minutes' drive from Grandin Village, a historic neighborhood with an Art Deco theater and natural foods co-op. The house itself reflects Roanoke history. According to the Dogs, the Italian stonemason who constructed it, Michael Grosso, used surplus from his projects in the town, some of which are still standing. Each corner is adorned with the same carvings he crafted for the local post office. It was sort of serendipity that a salvage company opened next door to the home, Whiteside said, gesturing to a carved stone gargoyle he and Culp unearthed that, like the carvings, apparently didn't make it to the post office. It now perches in the front yard, welcoming guests. When the Black Dog team bought the two-story building in 2003, it had no air conditioning or heat and a dilapidated roof and exterior. In an effort to preserve as much of the original house as possible, they kept the oak flooring in many of the rooms and, after stripping the house to its bones, reinstalled the trim. The original staircase stayed, as did two charming but non-functional fireplaces. Every reincarnated piece has a story. The sink in the downstairs bathroom once was a workbench in a Lexington, North Carolina furniture factory. The cap rail on the back porch was recovered from a yard patrol boat that the team found wrecked in Florida. A nod to Whiteside and Culp's Navy days. The body of the dining room chandelier is a wooden pattern once used as a mold for metal parts on ships. Whiteside and Culp found three containers of the patterns in Princeton, New Jersey. As soon as we pulled one out, he said, "This is a chandelier," Whiteside recalled. "So, that's what we created. It's a puzzle. Every piece is different, and everything is homemade." The dining room shelving unit was once the top half of a baby grand piano. No disrespect to the instrument intended. There's a monster glut of old pianos across the country, Culp said, so we've turned them into things like bars and are always looking for other new ways to use them. The crown jewel of the house is the master bath, a 16-by-10-foot suite with a head-to-head ceiling-mounted vanity, a luxury shower, and a soaking tub from about 1915. There's stained glass from England in the transom windows, and the walls have knotty pine paneling from 1940, salvaged from a church in Laurel, Delaware. The soaking tub once lived in the Laverock Hill Estate, a Georgian mansion in Glenside, Pennsylvania, and the silver expansion tank from the Stonehouse's original heating system is displayed above the tub, lending an industrial vibe. Culp declares it is his favorite room in the house because it so perfectly represents the fusion of old and new. It's a mixture of all these different salvage projects, and the combination of modern design and antique material says everything about Black Dog Salvage, he said. The opportunity to do this and make a home and really be able to highlight how things are used, you see things in a huge industrial showroom like ours, and the scale is different. So here you're able to place objects and utilize some of our salvage in the right scale, in the right frame. Wow, what a neat trip that is, huh? And by the way, the Stonehouse at Black Dog Salvage is located at 914 13th Street Southwest in Roanoke. You can go online and check them out at blackdogsalvage.com/the-stone-house. That's blackdogsalvage.com/the-stone-house. Rates from $400 per night for the entire house, which has three bedrooms, each with its own bath. Items in the house are for sale as is or can be custom ordered from the warehouse. Wow. Does that sound like an interesting trip? Huh? You better go with a truck because you're going to probably bring home something. Well, now we're going to head for Europe to take a Black Forest trek to German philosopher Heidegger's writing hut. Walter Nicklin is our author guide. His article published in the July 6, 2018 issue of the Washington Post. Stuck behind the wheel of a cramped rental car during a six-hour drive from Paris the previous day, it would take more than the threat of morning showers to keep me from stretching my legs on a Black Forest walking trail. That, after all, was why I was here in the southwestern corner of Germany, to walk in woods once so dense and dark before logging that they were named black. And this would not be mere aimless rambling. I had a clear destination in mind. I wanted to stand on the spot where Martin Heidegger, perhaps the 20th century's most influential philosopher, did his thinking and writing. Heidegger's hut, it's called in German, Hut, to see what he saw, to be inspired by the same pastoral landscape that inspired him. That's what I wanted. Well, not that his dense, sometimes mind-numbing prose had ever inspired me. That he became a Nazi in 1933 didn't help, but his ideas, especially as interpreted by others such as Jean-Paul Sartre and Hannah Arendt, had over a lifetime made an impression. To hell with the navel-gazing metaphysics, he seemed to say, when life is about an inescapable engagement in a world of here and now. Design. That was the defining word in one of his signature neologisms, meaning being there in the world, and the world in which Heidegger wrote during the tumultuous 1930s seems ever more relevant to our own. So it was that I found myself in the village of Tottenberg, population 700, about a 40-minute drive from Freiburg, where Heidegger worked as a university professor and briefly a rector. The southernmost area of the Black Forest claims its highest elevations, almost 5,000 feet, and so is known as the Hochschwarzwald, High Black Forest. That morning, from my hotel perch as mist rose from the valley below, I imagined wisps of smoke from countless campfires of invisible forest fairies. For my very first hike in Heidegger country, I followed the sound of a stream rushing down the high valley through the village. Soon I spotted trail signs with the term Wasserfallstag, a typically compound German word, in this case meaning waterfall climb. The trail was certainly steep, so yes, it would be a climb on my return. But when all about me birds were singing in fields of purple lupine, I shared their unconcern about the future. Then came a clap of thunder. As it echoed off the surrounding hills, the drizzle began. The clouds themselves seemed to fall from the sky as a fine mist enveloped the landscape. My fisherman's hat and small travel umbrella hardly helped in the steady downpour, so I sought refuge under the dense canopy of a huge beech tree and debated whether I should keep going toward the waterfall. The answer came in the form of another solo hiker, undeterred by the rain, who greeted me with an enthusiastic Guten Morgen as he strode by. Adjusting his backpack, disappearing into the mist, he began to whistle. I could swear it was the happy wanderer melody. I love to go a-wandering along the mountain track, and as I go I love to sing my knapsack on my back. Valderie, Valdera, Valderie, Valdera, ha 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 ha. It was indeed here in the Black Forest, along with the neighboring Alps and England's Lake Country, that taking a countryside walk for pleasure began to be popularized 2 centuries ago. With Romanticism's changing attitude toward nature, walkers were no longer dismissed as poor vagrants or dangerous drifters. Catering to today's hikers as well as trail bikers and cross-country skiers, countless well-marked, well-maintained paths crisscross the Black Forest. Most have a gravel or stone base so they don't get muddy in the frequent rains. Wooden benches and observation platforms are strategically placed trailside. Long before I got to the trail's destination, I could hear water crashing over a granite massif. At more than 300 feet, this was, I learned from a trailside marker, one of the tallest natural waterfalls in Germany. Stubenbach was the stream's name, rushing down from the high valley to join with other streams to spill into the Rhine. Somewhat analogous to America's continental divide, the Black Forest feeds 2 watersheds, not only the Rhine, but also the Danube. The next day, when I set out on the nearly 4-mile trail called the Martin Heidegger Rundweg, or Loop Trail, the sun had burned off the morning mist without a hint of rain. High up on the hill surrounding the village came the soothing sounds of birdsong, cowbells from grazing livestock, and gurgling rivulets tumbling downslope toward the Steubenbach. As for actually finding the hut itself, the signs were less auspicious. Its exact location was not marked on any map, and people whom I asked were at best polite but unhelpful. I attributed their vague responses to my rudimentary German. Since it was a Sunday, I couldn't ask at the tourism office, which was closed. By the second hour of the up-and-down hike, 500-foot rise and descent, my steps became less brisk, more hesitant. Though this was certainly not an Everest-like assault, I felt somehow ill-prepared, hiking shoes and trekking poles notwithstanding. My comfy hotel base camp beckoned. A tiny chapel came into view, set on the edge of a meadow at the tree line. I watched a fellow hiker, or rather fellow walker, enter the Datsun and light a candle. Or enter with her Datsun, excuse me, and light her candle. Maybe I should do the same? Instead, I finished the loop, resigned to failure. Rationalizing, I reminded myself that, as Heidegger himself emphasized, the quest, not the goal, was what mattered. Truth always remained elusive, but less than a half mile from my parked car, I caught a glimpse downslope of a gray shingled structure with green shutters. From the Heidegger photographs I had studied, it seemed familiar. Could it be? In a meadow surrounded by trees, it was all but invisible. No wonder I had first missed it. Unverborgenheit, or unconcealment, is a word Heidegger coined for the sudden discovery of truth, as if stumbling upon a clearing in a forest. I left the manicured trail for an overgrown path laced with electrified fencing to keep cattle from wandering. On hands and knees to duck under one set of wires, I couldn't help but laugh as I thought of the celebrated Heidegger trope of the woodcutter's laborers seeking to hack out a path to the clearing to the bright there-ness of what is. Next to the structure was a wooden trough collecting spring water, just as described and photographed. There was no evidence of recent human activity. Doors and windows were shuttered and locked. Hut, I concluded, was an understated description. Really, it was more like a cabin or a cottage. Whatever the description, I was happy. It had been hard to find, unearned. It would have been no fun at all. The next day, I went to the tourism office to confirm my finding. There's no signage, they explained, because the house isn't open to the public. It's still in the Heidegger family. Oh, I said, and quickly changed the subject. I asked the tourism advisor about other trails to explore and how to access the village swimming pool, for I liked Tottenberg so much that I had decided to extend my stay another 2 days. Soon I found myself walking the winding, steep street to a small cafe to treat myself to the there-ness of a cool, creamy Erdbeerisches Schaka, strawberry ice cream shake. Wow. Now there's a trip for you, huh? Just out of the blue. Well, no doubt many of you have a story or two, maybe more, about honeymoon travel. Well, writer Lynn O'Rourke of FamilyTravel.com has another moon travel experience to share with us. Her article, Expecting Ideas for Taking a Baby Moon, is from the September 2nd, 2018 issue of the News and Observer. You ready for this? Expecting a bundle of joy? Then take time now to enjoy being a twosome. Here are five ideas for experiencing a baby moon. Number one, linger in luxury. You're about to share your life with a little one, so treat yourself to luxury in Wyoming's Teton Mountains. At the Four Seasons Jackson Hole, the four-night pampering package includes spa time, specially designed for parents-to-be, as well as daily breakfast and the chance to unwind in a spectacular mountain setting. Nearby, Grand Teton National Park trails hug the shores of String Lee and Trapper Lakes. With elevation gain, the flat terrain provides ample opportunity to photograph the jagged peaks reflected in the water, wade into the shallow lake, and picnic along the shoreline. And you can find out more at fourseasons.com/Jackson Hole. That's fourseasons.com/Jackson Hole. Number two, take a bucket list trip. As your family, not to mention your belly, expands, the trips on your bucket list may shift positions as you redefine priorities. Peruse your list of current dream destinations and make reservations before the baby arrives. The islands of Tahiti, where the trade winds will sweep your cares away, are a top choice for many seeking a romantic holiday. Before late-night nursing begins, board a four-masted sailing yacht and relax amid blue lagoons and pristine coral reefs. Contact WindstarCruises.com if you're interested in this. That's WindstarCruises.com. Now, we go to number three, baby moon in Bermuda. Pillows may never matter as much as they do during pregnancy. That's why Bermuda's Fairmont Southampton includes your choice of extra pillows as part of its baby moon package. Located on nearly 100 acres on the south shore of the mid-Atlantic island, you'll be welcomed by colorful bougainvillea, swaying palms, and special treats sure to satisfy current cravings. Look forward to strolling along pink sand beaches and relaxing through a prenatal massage in the Willow Stream Spa. Check out more at Fairmont.com/Southampton-Bermuda. That's Fairmont.com/Southampton-Bermuda. Number four, energize an enchantment. With the spectacular red rocks of Sedona's Boynton Canyon as backdrop, this southwestern resort's on-site spa is described as a sanctuary where you can journey inside, back to the quiet, rooted spaces of your soul, setting the scene for a relaxing getaway with your partner before the excitement of parenting gets underway. Choose from an assortment of treatments crafted for guests who are expecting a child. EnchantmentResort.com brings you more information online. That's EnchantmentResort.com. And number five, unplug. And this is just some final commentary from Lynn O'Rourke. With your doctor's permission, go off the grid. Leave the lists that accompany your busy life behind and turn away from television news, sports scores, and pesky political punditry. Tune into nature, each other, and the quiet that you know is temporary. Read books, play cards, tell stories, linger over dinner, and enjoy your special time together. Stroll through the woods or along the beach. Dig your toes in the sand or swing in a hammock. Journal, take a nap, then another nap, and relish the special time for two. And before our time's out, we want to quickly check on the Carolina events calendar. This from the September-October 2018 issue of AAA Go magazine. Coming up on September 13th through 15th is the Spartoberfest, Jesus, Our Risen Savior Catholic Church in Spartanburg, South Carolina. You can enjoy live music, authentic German food, entertainment for children, artisans, and a Christmas market. There is a fee involved, and you can learn more at Spartoberfest.com. That's Spartoberfest.com. Like Oktoberfest, right? Okay, Spartoberfest.com. Whew, that's a tough one. Now, September 15th, we have the Lincoln County Apple Festival, Main Street, Lincolnton, North Carolina. Fresh apples by the bushel, crisp cider, and homemade apple pie. That sounds yummy. Also, crafts, food, entertainment, and kids' attractions. This is all free, by the way. And you can learn more at LincolnCountyAppleFestival.com. That's the LincolnCountyAppleFestival.com if you want information online. Also on September the 15th, the Creedmoor Music Festival, Main Street, Creedmoor, North Carolina, just about a 30-minute drive from Raleigh. Over 100 food and craft vendors, free children's activities, and all genres of music from talented local and regional artists and bands. And that, too, is free, my friend. And if you want to learn more about the Creedmoor Music Festival, check out cityofcreedmoor.org. So at cityofcreedmoor.org to learn more about the Creedmoor Music Festival taking place on Main Street September the 15th. And you know what? That's going to bring us to the end of another rousing episode of Armchair Traveler. We've certainly enjoyed it and hope you have. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and want to remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.